Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... This is a molecular tour of vitamin B12, and I'm in awe of this vitamin. So I do molecular tours from time to time of, I think, some of the more fascinating ones are the simple molecules. Some of the nerve agents are good. Some of the things like caffeine that we sort of tend to know. Some of the ones which do things biologically. The bases and stuff like that, very important ones. In general, it's flat. You can imagine where the electrons move on them if you know about delocalized orbitals or the structure of double bonds and flat rings. You can see optical activity in them if you do the molecular tour. So there's a basic advantage of doing a molecular tour. You can, I recommend getting onto the internet, looking at it. And you can do a three-dimensional model. When you see a three-dimensional model, you can easily get overwhelmed. Now, vitamin B12 is a pretty amazing molecule. I'm just trying to think of the number. I think it's 63 carbons, 88 hydrogens, cobalt, 14 nitrogens, 14 oxygens, phosphorus, set of cobalt, which go into it. So this is one thumping big molecule. In fact, it's the largest vitamin. Now, let's see what a vitamin is. It's if you don't get your vitamins, you don't vite. You need the amines. So an amines needs an N2 arm. So they're organic nature. And so you need essential nutrients and these things, which ideally lower class organisms have worked out how to make. They don't need to, but we've part of the contract of eating animals, we've got the convenience food, we've become addicted to it. So it's like if you just throw away your you economize by throwing away those useless pots and pans, you're always forced to go to McDonald's to buy things. So we're forced eventually, and in fact it's not just us, it's all the animals beneath us. So essentially bacteria and these archaic single cells, archaea cells, can make B12, obviously very important in the later life, a bit difficult, and then all the animals have just plants and everything have lived off it, and so essentially everything needs B12, essentially eats these bacteria, but or uses or ingests all these bacteria, have a relationship with it. These animals can have learnt how to get B12 out of plants. We've lost the ability to get B12 from plants, so we've got to eat the little fish and furry things. It's this horrible thing. And so if you're a vegan, this is one of the things of saying, we don't judge your morals. However, we do judge your biological history. You've got to have furry things in a tablet so you can survive. Now, vitamin B12 is a pretty amazing thing. It's it's called a cobalt amine. So it's got cobalt in it. Let's just go a little view on cobalt. So cobalt's in your D block. That's in your periodic table. You've got 2, 10, and 6. So that's S, P, D, and theoretically underneath you have F. I have the F between the S and D block. F stands for fine. S, sharp. P, principal. The D block is diffuse. So it's got a whole lot, the spectra has a whole lot of spectra. This is all due to the quantum mechanics of a human. So your top of your D block goes scandium, titanium, vanadium, chromium, manganese, iron, cobalt, nickel, copper, zinc. So your even ones, which are your titanium, chromium, iron, nickel, and zinc, they're more common because they've got an even number of protons in the nucleus. It's even, however, it's another way of saying you've got a spin up versus spin down in your nucleus. So your nucleus is nothing like the Bohr one, where you've got these little circles. It's a quantum mechanical fuzz pot with essentially the atom all over again, repeated on the inside with the added complexity. There's not just electrons, there's protons and neutrons in there. They have this shape. So, say in say lithium, the third proton has actually got a nodal line through it, just like I suppose inside hydrogen. Like it's exactly the same. So when it's coming down, if you can imagine that you're as much as you're smashing things together, you're smashing it apart. It's sort of like trying to actually sculpt things by a bottle bar fight. You're trying to mold something in bar fight. You grab things, and unless something falls into a corner, it gets picked up again and crushed. So in your nuclear synthesis, the even ones are much more common, and iron commonly so for another thing, because it's got a huge end of the line garbage truck. Amazing. So on the Earth, it's 6.3% iron. Then you've got aluminium that's up there. Silicon's up there. Oxygen's up there. Making all the elements. 27% silicon. So that gives you an idea. What's overlaying. We're basically, if people were coming past us, we would say, well, Earth, isn't it fantastic? It's overlaying. There's aluminium, magnesium, iron, silicon gem. That's a green gem. And then it's got an iron sulfide liquid layer. And then underneath that little condensed iron nickel core, if you wanted to describe the Earth that way. But cobalt is 0.003%. I've looked all these up. And I'm just really pleased that my brain is beginning to work again. I'm giving you a molecular tour of this B12, partly because it's part of the brain training. It's trying to give you, it's when I see molecules, I've got the quantum mechanics in my head from some computer from ages ago, 20 years ago, supercomputer simulations where you saw parts of the molecule crush and the electrons flee and move down different angles. It's got two different directions to go down, and the oxygen's on one path, and so it's saying, come over to me, and you can see how it flows. So you've got this, I suppose, the experience of supercomputers and a bit of quantum mechanics to actually really enliven it. So perhaps a molecular tour will do. As I said, I'll just try to go 63 carbons, 88 hydrogens, a single cobalt, 14 of nitrogens and oxygen, and a phosphorus. So, I myself have never seen a phosphorus other than a PO4. It's always a phosphate. I don't know. So your phosphate is your general thing. And you've got your cobalt. Now, cobalt, cobalt chelated chemistry. So you can think of a salt, and that's pretty boring. That's the electrons removed from it. And so it's not a metal, it's a stripped metal. It's a highly ionized. Organic metal complexes are a little bit more complex. Is it a metal or is it a non-metal? It's sort of suspended. It doesn't know whether it's a metal or it's an ion. It's sort of the organic complexes. So you've got your metal, and the metal is so precious that the organic molecules wrap around it and form a cage, a jewel box for it. And so it's basic cobalt. It's your D shell. So you can sort of imagine a lot of your D shells are the pyramid of Gases. Imagine two pyramid of Gases, one pointing up and one pointing sort of downwards. Imagine that they built the pyramid of Gaza. Firstly, you're going to make a foundation by digging out the ground and building so that equally high, you've got one at the base there. And when I say that what do you get that shape? It's a, called an octahedron. It's got eight surfaces. It's two square pyramids, one apex pointing up, the four on the flat plane, and one pointing down. I'm going to use that as a way of navigating the electrons of cobalt. So cobalt is a metal, but it's got all these D shell electrons, which are pretty much the same energy. So you can remove them pretty much the same. Now, one would say, well, if I remove one, surely that will make it incredibly positive, and then it doesn't work that way because we're talking quantum mechanics. The electrons don't repel each other, they don't see each other, they've got a wave function which means that they don't see each other, they're of degenerate energy in the way there. Now, it is true that you have to provide a lot of energy to ionize to, what is it, 8, cobalt 8 plus. It takes a lot of energy to produce pull those electrons away. We're not pulling electrons away, we're pulling the electrons back, or we're borrowing those electrons from that area, and they're all degenerate. So you've got these 8 positions of the electrons. And remember, so these are orbitals, but they're remember, there's got an occupancy of spin up, spin down, similar to the nucleus, spin up, spin down there. And it's sort of iron's interesting. It's around it, so it's electron. It's the electron-rich section of it, and it's becoming, if you can imagine, the left hand of the periodic table is more metallic. It's getting a little bit less metallic, and you've got a nitrogen cave. Just go to the very top of your cobalt. So cobalt's really important. I don't know whether I've specified this, and this shows my brain. If I've said this before, the other amazing cobalt is FeMoCo. And that's just put that aside, start a new sheet of paper, FeMoCo. It's another bacteria wonder child. It's a bacteria wonder child. It's this most amazing molecule of all. And it's FeMoCo is the molecule that bacteria use to crack open N2. When it cracks open N2, it can make nitrates, which makes protein, which makes fertilizer, makes the world go round. And essentially, before this bacteria came along to open this, it was, you know, the world was a jigsaw puzzle, a molecular jigsaw puzzle no one could crack. This FeMoCo is used by bacteria. It's fixed by plants, feed the plants. So if you imagine going into deep space, you need something which makes FeMoCo, and you need something which makes vitamin B12, and you need something which then converts that vitamin B12 into a meat that you can eat. You need that there. Now, it's interesting that the vitamin B12 that you eat, you can eat it for a plant, and you can't get it to you. It's got to be concentrated in a way, so it's got to be B12 in a way that your stomach acid can release it, because it's got to be the right acid that it's strong enough to get your B12 out without destroying it. So essentially, the older people or people who are antacids, they tend to have vitamin B12 deficiencies. So they've got the right acid to release it from the animal source. So you go through, but going into space, you need these two molecules with you to go across the FeMoCo. FeMoCo, if I can just say for a moment, puts even B12 into shame. Vitamin B12 is sort of like a baroque molecule. The FeMoCo is like the most advanced one from Silicon Valley. It's got a quantum crystal inside of layers, a metastructure of iron, sulfur. I kid you not, look up FeMoCo. And inside that crystal, it's like this cocoon, this beehive cocoon, is a carbon. Carbons love to bond, but this carbon bonds with nothing. It is chelated, and it's got this most incredible chelate, and on top of that, chelated tomb, and on top of that, it's crowned a chromium, which, a cobalt can actually, is this thing with its beautiful D-shell electrons, and that's that's connected in a different way, and organically underneath this is a sort of hook protein. So FemoCo, just fantastic. How it operates, one can sort of imagine that basically nitrogen gets so confused it just breaks apart. Sort of nitrogen, breaking nitrogen apart, it's a bit like opening a rabbit trap, where you've only got small little wires and you have to get one wire in and pull it apart and then add another one in and pull it slowly apart and not put too much energy. So say if your muscles are atrophied and you're trying to pull open this rat trap, you can just leave it open a little bit, wedge it in, leave it open another bit, and you can open it rather nicely with this FemoCo. So I can sort of imagine how that works, and you can imagine the FemoCo molecule pulsating up and down, and the carbon orbitals responding to it. Just amazing. So what we've got to do is, going back to B12, cobalamin, we've got the two pyramids. The top of the pyramid, you can add a, you've got your flavours, your restaurant flavours. You can add a methyl group, a cyanide group, a CN group, or an OH group. And so this means that you can feed someone your vitamin B12 of, say, the OH group, and it will mop out the cyanide. So if you are a bit concerned about Hitler, and you can go back in time, you can actually say, here, Adolf, take this B12, and you'll be fixed. Your cyanide won't work. So it's an anti-cyanide thing. That's the simplest thing. The next layer, if you can do, is I'm going to talk about a floor plan. It's sort of the standard stuff. This is where I like it, because it's got the cobalt, and the cobalt is, it's got its flat plane on the outside with its four chelation bonding sites. So chelate or ligand stuff is where it donates an electron, and the electron goes to the electron cloud. So it's sort of a quantum mechanical bond. It's not an ionic bond. It's an electron sharing bond. It's a ligand bond. It's sort of like this. Cobalt really wants to be a salt or something like that. It's sort of found an organic jacuzzi to be in. And so it's got its top, which it can have different beanies on, a methyl or a hydroxide or alcoholic beanie on. And it's sitting in this jacuzzi. And it's sort of with its cushions. It's got four nitrogen cushion, cloud cushions. So nitrogen is a carbon with a proton pushed into it, therefore it's got an extra electron to deal with. Because I've actually got a hydrogen inside me, and so it's got this, it's an electron-rich carbon. So it's, you can imagine the nitrogen's there. It's got four nitrogens around the side, and it's sitting on top of a hydrogen, a nitrogen, and that nitrogen is formed by this subterranean passageway which goes through a series of molecules, sticks around a nitrogen to stick it right up its ass. So you've got five nitrogens around it in a chelated cage for it. So I suppose you could, I don't know what you could do, just to get you to going, that the cobalt is extremely rare on the Earth's crust. It's, I don't know whether it's rare than it's silver. I think you have more gold in your body than you have cobalt. So if you were just wanted to mine cobalt, you wouldn't round up everybody else in the human race. If you round up the human race and all kill them all, put them up for cobalt, I don't think you'd get very much cobalt. You might get sort of a test tube of cobalt. You know, it wouldn't be much cobalt there, but it's incredibly important. What I think it does, it is very important in terms of making heme molecules, which it's making sort of like a copy of it, but in iron, so that you can get the oxygen. It's sort of the sophisticated chemical inside. If you don't have B12, your blood production, it just goes haywire, and you start producing these big blobby red blood cells which cause you to clot, and you just clot yourself to death because the body is desperate for its, can't make enough heme molecules accurately enough. It just goes to plan B, and plan B is basically, yeah, tough luck, mate. We're trying to keep you alive, but you're obviously not eating enough furry stuff. Fish. Have I told you? I want to eat fish, birds, eggs. B12. Sort of like your fish. For time. So, look, we've got there. I've got this idea that you've got your cobalt. Cobalt has got five nitrogens around it. Four on a flat plane. And I want to do the flat plane there. The nitrogens are in a five-atom ring. It goes nitrogen on the roof. So a five-atom ring is a pentagon. The pentagon, if you can imagine, is as a roof. On the nitrogen on the roof, and the gutters are two carbons, and two carbons on the floor. And what you do is you get these, four of these, and you place them around to lodge into the cobalt. Now, I've got four on a flat thing. I want you to change your world view to think of a box in front of you, a piece of paper in front of you. You've got the top right corner, the top left corner, left right, bottom left, bottom right corner there. And you, in those corners, you are placing the roofs of these pentagons inwards. This is forming a crown. I think there's some sort of word in there. And bear in mind that I'm not speaking to anyone. It's been a while since I've been in molecular physics. So a lot of these words I read, I don't take in. Let this go through again, just to check my memories there. 3 carbons, 88 hydrogens, a cobalt, 14 nitrogens, 14 oxygens, a phosphorus. There you go, to make it. So it's a very big thing. So we're just going to, I'm going to give the basic structure, and then you have to add and add and add. So what you do is that you've got your flat plane through, your two pyramids. You've got four pentagons pointing in, the roofs pointing in, the nitrogen on the roof, so that nitrogen is on the roof. It's absolutely got its wave functions of its electron clouds pointing into the centre of that central cushion. It's actually got this molecular structure which pushes them just at the right side. That cobalt will really love being in there. And it's got the electron clouds above and below the plane, sort of structured by having the other links into its ring in the plane. So it's got, you just have to, I suppose, imagine it. So the nitrogen clouds are sort of like a tetrahedron. And so you've got two clouds up and above pointing inwards in this ring around. Now you've got the two house frames pointing in, and one you connect on the bottom ones, you connect gutter to gutter directly, because there's really, this is just to bring them in really tight. And then the other ones you get gutter to gutter, but it's gutter to gutter connected by a carbon, so it goes rightmost pentagon angle goes up to the right top one, and you've got a carbon between it, and then you've got a carbon between the two roof ones around, goes around. So you've got this ring, and the ring's closed in a little bit by an asymmetric one at the bottom. So this is precision engineering. Now, what you also do is you add a methyl group. I have no methyl group in the top one. So that means that you've got a double bond up the top there. A double bond means that you can get electron flow happening up the top there. Bottom is you say, oh, I'm going to take out one of those electrons and use it as a bond. I put it with a methyl group in those two cross struts. You've got two methyl groups. That methyl group actually extends that bond, weakens that bond, extends it, makes it flexible so it can move a little bit. The top one is a fixed double bond. It's a nice flat bond up the top there, so you can imagine that. And then on the outside of these, so you've got, you can imagine you've got four floors of pentagons going, pointing outwards from your cobalts. You've got the roofs, and the floors are all pointing out some sort of like kiddies drawing of the world with the houses pointing in. And on those floors, you add a onto it either a methyl, which is a CH3, that's a bit of an oily one, or you can add a carbon with a a nitrogen, two hydrogens, so that's an amine, and onto that carbon also you've got two bonds, add an oxygen. And so this is sort of like your new mad water molecule. If you can imagine, it's oxygen and two hydrogens next to it, this is sort of hydrogen bond city area. So you add those around the outside, and on one end of the floor, one edge of the floor, you add, it's directly connected. On the next edge, it's actually connected by, it goes, so on one edge of that floor, it goes to a carbon and a nitrogen and oxygen thing. Next one, it goes carbon, the next carbon, the third carbon in, the third carbon up has it there. So that's a bit longer. It can move, it can flex and move around shape. But the overall idea of creating the edge of this is that you've got this chelated thing in the side held with the electrons flowing around. And then on the outside, you've got these water-attractant molecules, which means this is moves into the water, and you've got an oily inside. So if you've got something which also is attracted to water, but also is nitrogen, is a bit oily, it will tend to dip into the molecule, depending on what you have on that beanie stuff as well, that the top there. Now, on the left-hand side, you have, this is on the left-hand side, you have, of this, you have just simple carbon. You have these oxyamines on these. You have two oxyamines on this left-hand side. On the right-hand side, at the top right, you have a two methyl groups. So that's going to be a bit oily. But then you have another three atoms to a oxyamine, so that's water oriented. And the next one across, you have the right hand bottom pentagon, you have a three atom amine group, and then a three atom into what is beginning to look like some sort of amino acid, almost like an amino acid, in terms of that it goes to an oxygen bond and then to a nitrate bond, then it goes down a few more atoms to your phosphate. So this, at the edge of your right hand bottom pentagon, you have basically a cellar door entrance which goes down these really highly organic, I really don't know what an oxygen then a carbon, an oxygen then an amine. I'm used to a carboxyl acid, a carbon, and then an amine in terms of your amino acid. I don't quite really understand the oxygen and an oxygen on one atom and the next one being amine, but it goes two carbons, an oxygen, amine, an oxygen, amine, and then carbons down into your phosphate. Now we're into familiar territory here, because your phosphate is O3. This is your biologically active negative battery. So you can imagine squeezing this, and you can push the electrons down and out. It's the most electrically active, oily, water-coated, all these properties associated with it. The phosphate then connects to something which looks suspiciously like DNA as the phosphate, as with the DNA connects to a ribose crystal, which is a crystal, a molecule, which is your 5-atom sugar. 1, 2, 3, 4. Between 1 and 4 is an oxygen. The fourth one has got it's got a methyl group of it. So number 3 connects to your phosphate, and number 1 connects to something which looks like a purine. So it was purine, so it would be like a adenosine. It looks a bit like adenosine in terms of, we've now gone up from the phosphate to the ribose, getting up to the something which looks like an adenosine or purine. It's got a pyramid. On the pyramid, it's got 2 nitrogens on the gutters, a carbon on the apex. The hexagon of atoms on that pyramid, on that pentagon, is all carbons. And on the bases, on the base of that hexagon, going out to the right now, I can visualize it. On the right is 2 methyl groups. So your 2 methyl groups, and on your ring, your 2 methyl group is going to take a couple of your bond electrons out. It's going to make that just really oily, non-metallic. It's going to be a lot of electron activity in your aromatic ring down there. It's really not an aromatic ring because there's very few. There's only one. Sorry, I take this back, because there's only one methyl group. So if there were 2 methyl groups on that, or 2 things bonded on that carbon, it would have to be. So it's still highly. It's basically, sorry, I take this back, because it hasn't got nitrogens, it's got carbons in it. It's actually a very highly conductive metal ring. So you've got your pentagon with your 2 nitrogens, then that's hooked into basically a benzene ring. But I suppose you would call it a toluene, because it's got a toluene. It's got the so toluene's a very good oil solvent, I suppose. What I can see is that the 2 bonds, double bonds, or 3 double bonds in that ring of carbon with some nitrogens at your little ring, pentagon ring of nitrogens out there, that will have a lot of double bonds. A great source. I sort of imagine that as a resonant support. You can imagine electrons going in there, pulsating. It's sort of like a bagpipe. I sort of imagine like that. The important thing is that nitrogen, that you've got your classic base nitrogen there on your pentagon and hexagon of your purine, your base nitrogen there. That base one is your typical one, which is always links to your ribose. The top one there is your nitrogen. It's just nitrogen there. It's not, you've got 2 nitrogens, it's got the electron clouds sticking up there. That is ideal for sticking in the ass of your cobalt molecule. So it's sort of your long ladder going down. So if you imagine you're snaking stairs going down to phosphate, which is your sort of like your negative engine room, then sticks up to your standard ribose. That's how you connect a phosphate to a purine. The purine's got this, in this case, nothing in its hexagon except electrons. It's like its electron source there. It's got its methane or methyl groups on the outside, which says water can stay away from me. So it's oily. Your toluenes are quite oily. So you've got your benzene is gassy, oily, reduces its volatility and all that type of stuff. It sticks underneath. So you've got this beautiful thing. You've got this flat plant of nitrogens, and it's actually just crimped in a little bit, so it closes in. You can imagine like a pipe clamp. It's pipe clamped in on the cobalt. The cobalt can't jump out because you've got your two electron, your wave functions of your protein, of your nitrogen pointing in, your double wave functions holding it in the center. Then you've got all the structure on the outside rim of your flat plane of four pentagons, nitrogen tipped pentagons going in. On the floor of that, you've got these sort of almost water flotation devices, hydrogen bond sitting is there. And at the last moment, on one side, it's slightly oily. You've got some methyl groups up there. Then you've got this snaking down to a little bit of something which looks a bit like a protein. It's got a carbon with an oxygen, a nitrate there. And then that goes down to a few more to a phosphate. I don't know. I think you need that type of electron thing to actually provide sufficient electrons to bond with your phosphate. I don't think I've ever seen a phosphate just stick onto an oily alkane chain or hydrocarbon. It requires something a bit more complex. And then that sticks onto your ribose stuff on number three carbon. Again, you've got the oxygen there to suck the or to provide the electron, because PO4 really is PO4 double minus. It likes to suck in electrons through its I suppose quantum mechanical overlap, and then your ribose has got a lovely sticking to that bottom nitrogen. That bottom nitrogen holds this plate of carbons, electrons there, then sticks on the underneath, comes up to the underneath. I can see it quite well. I don't think I've done a very good job of explaining it. The most important point for me is actually memorising. The thing is that we've got such a very, very the things bequeathed to us to life by these bacteria are just these most sensational innovations. It would blow any visiting aliens away to think they would possibly ignore all our civilization, all our cars, all our sophistication, and they just go down, take me to your bacteria. My God. How long you've been doing this? For billions of years. How long have you been doing Themokine? That is just amazing. And B12 is just an amazing thing. To actually get this trace element, circulate in the system, and put it in a biologically supercomputer of something with so much activity in it is just absolutely incredible. Next time you go to an aquarium and pop, stick your hand in, put one of your fish in your mouth, you just say, well, look, and they hold you up, you say, well, look, I had to do it because millions of years ago, my relatives, they ate the first fish, and now we're addicted to it. We're actually addicted to you as a food. Okay, thanks a lot for listening. I hope this comes out okay. Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.